Packers playing at the goal line as Wilson scrambles to keep it alive. The game's final play is a Wilson lob to the end zone, which is fought for by Tate with Jennings simultaneous. Who has it? Who do they give it to? Touchdown! One guy goes up, touchdown. The other said no time.
Welcome back into the Ninth Circle. Kyler Mead joined by Trey Lanthier, Alex Gallant. That is what everybody is talking about right now. And we're joined by someone who was there and witnessed it live, I understand. Eric Williams, Seahawks writer for the Tacoma News Tribune. Eric, thank you so much for joining us. A little bit late, I understand.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And I was there for the chaos that ensued after that.
Just tell us about it. I mean, we watched it, obviously. And I mean, you heard the sound. It was crazy. But what was it like just being there? What did people think? What was going on?
Well, I think a lot of people were in shock and just trying to figure out exactly, you know, what had happened and if it was a catch or, you know, if it wasn't a catch. So that was kind of the first thing, was just trying to figure out, you know, exactly what happened. And then you're waiting around. And then, you go back and actually watch the replay after they decided it was a touchdown. And you're like, ooh, that doesn't really look like a catch, you know, when you go back and watch it. So, you know, you're concerned about, you know, what the ramifications of the, you know, obviously the call is.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, certainly. And I was reading your live chat on the website earlier today. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I was getting the sense that after you've looked at it for quite some time, you actually believe that it was a catch?
Yeah, you know, and I think I'm definitely in the minority there. But from my perspective, and again, you know, I played football in high school and in college growing up, both defensive back and receiver. And I was always taught that as a defensive back, you had to definitively show that you had the ball. You know, you had to show that you had possession of the ball. And a lot of times if you weren't able to definitively show that either by handing the ball to the referee or just having it on your own, you know, the 50-50 balls generally go to the offense. And so going back and look at it, it looked like initially Tate was able to get two hands on it, and then, you know, obviously the DB came over the top of him, made first contact with the ball, but Tate was underneath him, and it looked like he maintained his hands on the ball throughout the, you know, the time they went down to the ground. And so from my perspective, it looked like he still had a piece of the ball, and therefore, you know, it was a simultaneous catch. Now, I've also talked to former officials, you know, and doing my reporting and talked to tons of people around the league, and I think the discrepancy is, you know, simultaneous catch, everybody has a different viewpoint of what that means. But from my perspective, it certainly looked like, you know, it was debatable whether Tate, you know, actually made the catch or not.
Well, Eric, you know, as a Charger fan myself, I had to live through the Hockley ruling, and
so I've
gone through this as well.
We have that same reaction when we just laugh hysterically at him, just poking fun at him.
But I was wondering, where do you think that this lands in not in necessarily a bad call, but in where people will put it as far as how much a ref controls the game and an ending that's so controversial and so widely debated? Where do you think this lands with the Tuck rule and the Hockley rule?
I definitely think it's in the top five. And one of the reasons I think it's in the top five is just the situation surrounding it because of the replacement ref. I think that kind of adds to it a little bit. The fact that you have inexperienced guys out there, you have a guy that, you know, ref Division III games. You have another guy that was with the Big 12 but was let go. And I think the guy that was actually the head referee was maybe a high school official and did some Division III games.
Mm-hmm.
So just the experience that you have on the field, that's really been the big thing that you've seen, the speed of the game, the inconsistency in the calls. You know, I think we had 24 calls total in that game, and it just seemed like the game dragged on forever and they were calling everything. It just makes for, you know, a debacle out there.
Yeah, from my point of view, I watched the entire game, and in the first half, I must say that I think the refs didn't really do that bad of a job in the first half.
That was okay.
Yeah, but in the second half, do you think these replacement refs feel a sense of pressure in the late moments? They seem to just amp up the amount of calls that they make in the second half, and the game just dragged on, and It just really puzzling sometimes how they can start off so strong, but then maybe it seems like the pressure and the spotlight gets to them in the second half, trying to be perfect out there.
And I don't even think it's necessarily the pressure of the game. I think it's the pressure of knowing that they're going to be evaluated on every call after the game by the league. And I know in the first couple of weeks there were some complaints that a lot of the illegal touching in the first 5 yards was going uncalled. And so it seemed like they seemed to overcorrect for those types of things and really err on the side of, I'm going to make that call if it's borderline. And that, I think, when you have regular officials, they tend to let those guys play a little bit more because they know, you know, what's a legitimate call and what's not a legitimate call. And with these guys, they don't know. And I think they're also getting bullied into making calls, you know, by either coaches screaming or yelling or players.
Yeah.
And you see flags coming late, and that's like the most frustrating thing is when you think a play is legit. You know, the one example is Cam Chancellor on 3rd and 2. It looked like he made a decent play on the ball, and he was called for pass interference. It actually extended a drive for Green Bay, and they went on to score a touchdown on that drive. Those are things that you just wouldn't see if you had regular refs out there.
And I've refereed soccer before. I mean, obviously a youth level, but there's this level of, you get to a point sometimes when you feel like you're in a groove, and then sometimes you get to a point when you feel like there's just, everyone must be able to see the wheels turning in your head. And
right.
The game that I really paid very close attention to this week was Sunday Night Football, the Patriots-Ravens game, just for a variety of reasons. And I could see the wheels turning in those refs' head all game. I think it's got to be kind of a similar thing.
Yeah, and it was similar to, I believe it was the same ref in that Ravens-Patriots game that did the Seahawks-Cardinals Week 1 game where it sort of fell off at the end, too.
And so now, getting away a little bit from the refs, let's just talk about the Seahawks. What does this mean to them with everything? I mean, to knock off the Packers at home, I mean, not home for the Seahawks, but still, everything that happens at home in Seattle is just amazing. But to knock off the Packers, to make this huge statement, what does this mean to them, even considering everything that's surrounding this?
Well, obviously it's pretty big to get a win like that on Monday night. It's tainted a little bit because of the way that they got the win, but they don't care. I mean, a win's a win, and they're moving on to the next week. They're 2-1, and they sit in pretty good position, you know, now going to St. Louis in week 4 and then Carolina in week 5. Both of them are road games, but the way that they're playing right now, I think those are pretty winnable games for them. And then I think actually the national attention that, you know, that play has received kind of works in their favor because they can now take on an underdog role, you know, nationally. People are kind of looking at them like they didn't really deserve that win. And I think if you watch the game, I mean, Seattle definitely was the better team that night.
Sure.
Unfortunately, they needed that play at the end to cement the victory, but I think they pretty much dominated, you know, definitely the first half. And then, you know, Green Bay obviously made some adjustments in the second half and was able to move the ball a little bit. But, you know, I think they're definitely a team on the rise. They're a team that plays from a defensive mindset. I definitely think they have one of the top 5 defenses in the league. And just their ability to get pressure on Green Bay, you know, the 8 first half sacks, and that had been an issue the first couple weeks. Only had 2 going to that game. I think the defense definitely put Seattle on the map that night.
What's your opinion on Russell Wilson? He had kind of an up and down game as far as statistically. He came through with obviously a pretty dang impressive drive in the end there. I think the thing to take away from this is whether or not the call was right, no question they at least deserved to be there against the Packers. And so he's the one in a big way that got them there. What is your takeaway on Russell Wilson? And do you think he's the franchise guy going forward?
I think during the meat of the game, he certainly can play better. Part of the issue with Russell is the play calling is so conservative because they really don't want to turn the ball over and give teams short field to make it easier to score. So they're really playing it close to the vest offensively and doing a lot of just basically turn around and hand it to Marshawn. But the one thing that really stands out with Russell is his ability to make things happen at the end of the game. He really plays with ice in his veins, and he's able to come up with plays. You know, it might not look pretty, but he'll scramble around and convert a third down, and then he'll sling it downfield and put the ball on the receiver to make a play. And you know, even that last play with Golden Tate, after he made that throw, if you saw it when the camera hit him, he wasn't jumping up and down or going crazy or anything. He was walking around like he expected to make that play. And I think it's that kind of confidence that he injects in the rest of that offense, and guys kind of feed off that. That's what you saw during the preseason, and I think that's what you saw at the end of the Arizona game as well, but they weren't able to come up with that final play.
So now looking ahead to this St. Louis game really quick, is this the game where Daryl Bevel is finally going to open things up on offense maybe sooner than waiting until the final drive of the fourth quarter, allow Russell Wilson to try and make some plays downfield? And yes, it might result in an interception, but that's the name of the game sometimes in the NFL, even the best throw interception. So is this the game where he's going to get more opportunities early on to make a quick strike?
You know, it's possible, although I think St. Louis secondary is underrated. When you look at Cortland Finnegan that they got from Tennessee, and Janoris Jenkins is actually a pretty good corner in his rookie year that's done a nice job. They can get after the passer a little bit. Robert Quinn and Chris Long have two sacks each. But I think this is a team that they should be able to run the ball on pretty easily. They've beaten the Rams 13 of the last 14 times, so they kind of have their number. Certainly, Russell will have his opportunities to make plays in the passing game. One of the things I got to say about the offense, you know, Daryl Bevel calls the plays, but Tom Cable is really the head of the offense and the guy that kind of sets the tone and philosophy, and he's a run-first guy. He's an offensive line coach, and really Bevel's kind of taking Cable and Pete Carroll's orders.
Well, we've seen two Seahawks games come down with some controversy, including that Cardinals game that they played in the first game. And speaking of the Cardinals, we're out here in Arizona as you know, obviously an NFC West follower. Do you think that this team is legitimate at 3-0 leading the NFC West?
Oh yeah, I definitely think Arizona is legit, and I got to give props to Ray Horton, the defensive coordinator down there.
Exactly,
he actually went to my high school at Mount Tahoma here in Tacoma. Guy that I kind of looked up to growing up playing high school ball.
That's cool.
And that guy knows his stuff defensively, obviously, you know, trained under Dick LeBeau in Pittsburgh, and they're just kind of sending guys from all over the place down there. So they're kind of like Seattle. They play from a defensive mindset, and then offensively they just have to score enough points to make it stand up at the end of the game. And then Kevin Cobb has looked like a different guy. You know, I basically thought that he was done, but he's proven a lot of people wrong with what he's done in the past couple weeks. So, yeah, I think they're legit, but mainly based on what they can do on defense, and then, you know, having a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, one of the best receivers in the game.
We're joined by Eric Williams, Seahawks writer for the Tacoma News Tribune. We really appreciate your time. Just one or two more questions, then we're going to let you go. Real quick, a lot of my really good friends are Utah State guys, and love Robert Turbin, love Bobby Wagner.
Yeah.
I mean, are we going to get to see Robert Turbin at all this year?
Well, that's up to Beast Mode. Beast Mode doesn't like to give up his carries, and you know, they basically just let him roll until he says, you know, he's tired and taps out. I think what you're going to see is Lynch gets a lot of carries early, and then I think they'll start to kind of phase him back a little bit in the second half of the season and let Turbo get in there. Robert kind of struggled a little bit in that Arizona game. There was a couple plays in there, if he would have hit the hole correctly, it could have been big gains for him. So I think he was a little tentative in that first game. Maybe it was just kind of first game jitters, but they really like his skill set. They like the physical way that he runs, which is similar to Marshawn. And he actually has a little bit more juice than Marshawn when he hits the second level. I think he's a little faster. So, yeah, they like that pick, and they think that he's going to be a good back in years to come. And then Bobby Wagner's really played pretty well, I think, in the time that he's been on the field as a rookie. He's a tackling machine. He's very athletic for a middle linebacker. So they're really happy with both those guys that got out of Utah State.
Okay, and we've gone this far and haven't really gone into probably the most impressive part of this team, the defense. I know the Monday night guys were really pumping up the secondary in the pregame shows, but it was the defensive line that took over. Bruce Irvin had sort of a coming out party in a primetime spotlight. What impresses you most about this defense? Is there a particular area that stands out, or is it really just a collective effort from the defensive line all the way back to the secondary?
You know, I think it is a collective effort, but I do think it starts at the back end. Their ability to press people at the line of scrimmage, throw people off their routes, really allows that defensive line a little bit more time to get after the passer. And I think you saw that against Green Bay in the first half. You know, Rodgers is looking, and he had to go to his first, second, and third progression. And by the time he gets there, then the rush is able to get to him. I thought they did a nice job of getting pressure from the interior. You know, Brandon Mebane and Jason Jones pushing the pocket really made it much easier for guys like Irvin and Clemens to get off the edge and get to Rodgers. So just a defensive unit that's really working good as a unit and playing well off each other. And then I think they're one of the best tackling defenses in the league. Guys like Cam Chancellor, KJ Wright, Leroy Hill, they're very sure tacklers. And you don't see a lot of, you know, yards after the catch when guys do catch it out in the flat or in the middle of the field.
Well, we're joined by Eric Williams, Seahawks writer for the Tacoma News Tribune. Really appreciate your time. Excited to see where the Seahawks team goes. This NFC West is very, very impressive this year with San Francisco, Arizona, and anytime Sam Bradford decides to have that great awakening we've been waiting for, this could be a heck of a conference. Eric, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Eric.
Okay, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a good night.